Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
I hope everybody is well.
Yes, thank you.
Please join me in saying Liana Bukov. Anna Bukova. Yadula Chimitra. I'm reading the section 19, and all the people saw the voices. Verse 302. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Ma Shofar, Apikala, Esha Verucha, Umaya, Ufaka Kola, Itkalil Behaimida, Nafkin Kalim, Afaranim. Rabbi Yosef said, as the physical shofar makes a sound, which includes fire, air, and water, here too everything is included in it. For here in the sound that comes out from the shofar, fire, wind, and water are included, which are Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet, the secret of the three columns. And from this sound, other sounds emerge. The verse is very esoteric. Shofar is an amazing tool that people don't understand how it works and why it works this way. The shofar actually represents the Sefirah Bina, which is the energy store. When someone blows the shofar, the wind that comes out of their mouth includes moisture. The wind that comes out of their mouth includes the balance between water and fire. The lungs that they're blowing from, that air, as the Zohar says in the Parsha of Pinchas, without the lungs, the body would burn up. It is only this chesed in the lungs that makes us work. The oxygen that powers the body, that is the fire, comes from the same place, but it's in a balanced way. There are many more aspects of the shofar that I highly recommend one read the various sections with as one deals with the shofar during Rosh Hashanah. And I would like to see, in one of these days we will start to pray for, the shofar being blown again every Friday afternoon in Israel, announcing the Shabbat. It's a very powerful tool that we should be able to use again now that the people and the majority of the people are in the land of Israel. But the rabbis have not yet accepted that. They do follow a conservative path. And there's nothing wrong with that. Does anybody have any questions? Today's class is located on the Revealed Wisdom page, the Aleph Bet series. When you open that up, I believe it's class number 4. There are two links in that class. The first one, which says 2A, opens up to the meaning of the names and where we left off last time and where we are starting this time has to do with the trope. Every letter has a trope, even though when you read a tikkun or when you read a Tanakh, depending on the Tanakh that you have, every letter has a trope, but normally we're used to seeing only one trope on a word, because the trope, as we are using it, is telling us where to pronounce the word. The trope, as we are using it, is giving us a tune or a chant for that particular word. The trope is making connections, either in the context of a pause or as a connection to the next word. Azla, one of the names of the trope. It means going away, because it often is the end of the phrase of a padma vyasva. Darga is another name of the trope. I'm not describing the way that trope looks. I felt it was too difficult to do so in this context, or to try and print that in this section. One day I will do that. Sometimes the names will give you a sense of the way the look of the trope is. But the history of the trope says these marks are not really from the beginning. These marks only were developed during the 700s, 800s. They've only been around about 1,000-1,200 years. Now that may seem a long time, but the context, the concept of trope has always been around. We have always had a way to read the written Torah with a chant, with a song, with singing. We have always had instructions to tie things together or to pause. We've always had instructions where to pronounce the words. But that does not mean that that is the only way to do it. The pattern has been to read the scroll according to tradition, according to the Masoretic text, which is essentially the oldest written scroll that has the vowels attached to it. That scroll does not have trope, because that scroll comes from around the destruction of the Second Temple. But that scroll was something that someone practiced the reading from as he memorized the Torah. But you can't read the Torah from your memorization. It's prescribed by halakha not to do so. One must read it. And what one says as you read the scroll, you are transferring the energy of your consciousness. And that's why it's so important that the reader be of high caliber, and that the reader be in a happy frame of mind. And all of this is part of the halakha, and all of this is something that we need to strive to reach. Even when we read the Tanakh ourselves, there's trope in every aspect of the Tanakh. We need to be joyful when we read it. We need to be happy. Dargah means trill, because its sound is trill, is shrill. It's like a bird singing. Or step, from its shape. The shape is that of a step. Enachta means pause, rest, because it is the pause in the middle of a verse. It is a phrase. It's like a comma or a semicolon. It's a pause in the verse. Yeresh means expulsion, driving out. The reason is not clear from the tradition. Yershaim means a double Geresh, and its appearance is exactly that. Both marks are there. Mapach means turning around. In old manuscripts, it was written like a U on its side. Hence, like someone doing a U-turn. In printed books, it has a V-shape, possibly because that was easier for the early printers to make. In Eastern communities, it is called the Shofar Mechupah, reverse torn, because it faces the other way from the Shofar Cholech, which is the Munach. Mercha means lengthener because it prolongs the melody of the word that follows. In modern usage, it sometimes means a comma, a stop, or a pause, a long pause. But this usage is taken from the cantillation sign, from the physical printing. But the mercha, there are many different chants associated with the trope. Many. Because it's coming from the tradition. I mean, on a physical level, it's coming from the tradition of the different areas of where Jews were living. But it's also coming from the 12 different tribes. Each tribe was given a Torah scroll by Moshe before he walked up the mountain. Not Mount Sinai, but Mount Nebo. He made 13 scrolls at that time. And he gave one to each tribe and one that went into the ark. And so each tribe has their own tradition of how the scroll is to be read. It's not followed today. But this is why we have this consistency, or what is considered inconsistency. When you go to learn how to chant the Torah, the teacher is going to teach you. In America, almost all of the traditions are taught in an Ashkenazi frame. But if you ever go listen to an Iranian synagogue, a synagogue that comes from Iran, when it talks about the mercha being the lengthener, and if it is in the Haftorah, because that is where they spend the most time and invest the most ego, actually. Almost every word, they have this lengthening process where they literally, every word can take 20, 30 seconds to sound. The Mercha Kufula. The kufula means the double, because it looks like two merchas together. There are only five of these in the whole of the Chumash. You can look up one in your Tanakh to get a sense of what is the mercha kufula, and I've listed those verses here. The munach means a resting. It's literally a stop, because the shape is a horn lying on its side. In Eastern communities, it is called called the Shofar Cholef, the horn going forward, and the Munach Legameh, the Munach on its own, is a disjunctive used mainly before the Revi, Reviah, but occasionally before a Pasar. It may be distinguished from ordinary Munach by the dividing line, a Pasik following the word. You may have seen in your Tanakh between two words this line, this vertical line. You don't know what it's doing there, but it's literally dividing the words so that you don't run them together. Pashta means to stretch out because its shape is leaning forward or in reference to a hand signal. Many times the reader of the Torah scroll Saturday morning will have someone to his right, the left of the podium as the congregation views it, unless it's a Sephardi synagogue where the scroll is in the middle. The reading stand is in the middle. But this person is following along, but he's also directing the reader with hand signals, telling him when to stop, telling him when to lengthen his song. The nuance between the two can be very intricate. There is usually two people following along to correct him in case he reads incorrectly, which is very important because we need to hear the scroll as it is meant to be heard. Paser means lavish or strewn because it has so many notes. Paser is a very lengthy note. It's extended out, it moves up and down. It's really a very beautiful sound. The kadma means to progress, to advance. It always occurs at the beginning of a phrase, often before other conjunctives, and its shape is leaning forward in particular. It is the first member of the kadma va'azla pair, which is a very common sentence structure, sound structure, chanting structure in the Torah. The Revi means quarter or fourth, probably because it splits the half verse from the start to the Anachta, or the Anachta to the end, into quarters, as it ranks below the Zakif, the main division within the half verse. What this is saying, before I finish it, you have a verse of 10 words, 8 words. The middle is a pause, like a comma. And then if you have a verse of 20 words, the middle is at 10 words, but then they have pauses at 5 words or 15 words. All of this is built into helping to transfer metaphysical energy. Other possibilities are that it came forth in the Zarka table, in the current Ashkenazi table. It is the fifth item down. Or that it was regarded as occupying the fourth level in the hierarchy. Its apparent appropriateness to the square or diamond shape of the symbol is coincidence. In most manuscripts, it is simply a point. The sound of that, of the E, is a four different sounds. Up, up, down, down. Some people do it. Some techniques are down, down, up, up. Segol means a bunch of grapes or a shape which looks like a bunch of grapes. That's really a bad description. The segol looks like three dots, like the vowel of a segol, that has no meaning. The word segol is the word that is translated in the Torah scroll as chosen. And it's really such a corrupted translation. The segol is three dots as a vowel, two above and one below. It represents the three-column system, the right, the left, and the center. And the same thing is true in the segol. It's a balanced sound, a balanced sequence of chanting. Shalshelet, it's a chain, either from its appearance or because it is a long chain of notes. There are only four in the whole of the Torah. The Sof Pasuk means the end of the verse. It is the last note of every verse. It is sometimes called the Siluk, taking leave. One of the ways of knowing if the chanter, if the reader of the Torah scroll is a good one, is if every verse he ends in the same pattern of sounds. Elisha Kintana Gedola translates as to detached, because they are never linked to the following note as one musical phrase. The Kintana is short, small. Yidula is big. These are two different tropes. Talisha Ketana, the small one, and the Talisha Yidula, the large one. Devir means broken, because it represents a break in reading. In some traditions, there is a big jump down in pitch between the first and second notes. Tivcha, the diagonal or the hand breadth. In old manuscripts, it was written as a straight diagonal line. In printed books, it is a curve, apparently to make it a mirror image of the mercha, with which it is usually paired. The two together could be regarded as forming a slur, connecting the two words together. The name Tivcha may be an allusion to a hand signal. Yativ, resting or sitting, because it may be followed by a short pause, or more probably because the shape is like a horn sitting up. In the Italian tradition, it is called Shofar Yativ, the sitting horn. Zakef Katon Gadol means upright. It's really two different tropes. Zakef Katon is the small one. Zakef Gadol, the large one. It's either a short sound or a long sound, but essentially the same sound. The Zarka means the scatterer, because it is scattering of notes. In Numbers, chapter 35, verse 5, in the Parashat of Maaseh, has two notes found nowhere else in the Torah. There is a Karnei Farah, means the horns of a cow from its shape, sometimes called the Paser Gadol. And the other one is the Erach Ben Yomo, means the moon one day old, because it looks like a crescent moon, sometimes called Galgal, the circle. The history. Three systems of Hebrew punctuation, including vowels and cantillation symbols, have been used throughout the history. One is called the Babylonian, one is called the Palestinian, and the third is called the Tiberian. So whenever you hear a Jewish person say, there's no such thing as a Palestinian, you should remind him about the true history of the word having to do with the system of Hebrew punctuation. Only the last of which is used today, the Tiberian, is the only one being used today. The Babylonian biblical manuscripts from the Gaonic period. The Gaonic period is the period after the finishing, it's a bad word, I forget the proper word, after the Talmud was redacted, was completed, the Babylonian Talmud, that period is the Gaonic period until around 1200-1300 after the Zohar was released, although they do not tie it in that sense. But these are periods of where we place the commentators on the Talmud, because these commentators, the earlier ones, have greater honor, so that the later ones do not say they were wrong, but they may disagree with them, and they do so in an honorable way. This Babylonian system contained no cantillation marks in the current sense, but they have small Hebrew letters that are used to mark significant divisions within a verse. Up to 8 different letters are found. Depending on the importance of the break and where it occurs in the verse, these correspond roughly to the disjunctives of the Tiberian system. For example, in some manuscripts, the letter Tav, for Tavir, for break, does duty for both the Tiberian Tavir and the Zakef. In general, there are no symbols for the conjunctives, though some late manuscripts use the Tiberian symbols for these. There is also no equivalent for low-grade disjunctives such as Talisha Gedolah. These are generally replaced by the equivalent of a Zakef or a Rabia. What this paragraph is saying, in the Babylonian system, they would make, in the manuscripts, they would write small Hebrew letters as a reminder to them of where to stop and where to break and where to slow down in their chanting. But it is not as complex or as complete as the Tiberian system, which is the only one being used today. Nothing is known of the musical realization of these letters, these marks, but it seems likely that if any of these signs are associated with a musical motif, the motif was applied not to the individual word, but to the whole phrase, ending with that break. A somewhat similar system is used in the manuscripts of the Quran to guide the reader in fitting the chant to the verse. And the physical trope marks in the Tiberian system were developed around the time that the Quran developed. So there's consistency between the two. Not copying, but consistency. The system is reflected in the cantillation practice of the Yemenite Jews, who now use the Tiberian symbols, but tend to have musical motifs only for the disjunctives and render the conjunctives in a monotone. It is notable that the Yemenites have only 8 disjunctive motifs, thus clearly reflecting the Babylonian notation. In essence, it's saying we have a complex system, we have a less complex system, and we have a balancing system. That's what these three names are representing. The same is true of the Karait mode for the Haftorah. While in the Sephardi Haftorah modes, different disjunctives often have the same or closely similar motifs, reducing the total number of effective motifs to something like the same number of 8 or 9. The Palestinian system. The Babylonian system, as mentioned above, is mainly concerned with showing breaks in the verse. Early Palestinian manuscripts, by contrast, are mainly concerned with showing phrases. For example, the Tivcha Enachta, the Zarka Segolta, and the Pashta Zakev sequences, with or without intervening unaccented words. These sequences are generally linked by a series of dots, beginning or ending with a dash or a dot in a different place to show where the sequence is meant to stop or start. Unaccented words, which in the Tiberian system carry conjunctives, are generally shown by a dot following the word, as if to link it to the following word. There are separate symbols for more elaborate tropes, like the Pazer and the Talisha Gadolah. The manuscripts that we have are fragmentary. No two of them follow in quite the same conventions, and these marks may represent the individual reader's memory aids, rather than a formal system of punctuation. For example, vowel signs are often used only where the word would otherwise be ambiguous. In one manuscript, presumably of somewhat later date than the others, there are separate marks for different conjunctives, actually outnumbering those in the Tiberian system. For example, the munach before the enachta has a different sign from a munach before the zakev. And the overall system approaches the Tiberian in comprehensiveness. In other manuscripts, in particular those containing the Targum, rather than the original text, the Targum is the Chumash translated into Aramaic. The Tiberian symbols have been added by a later hand. In general, it may be observed that the Palestinian and Tiberian systems are far more closely related to each other than either is to the Babylonian. This system of phrasing is reflected in the Sephardic cantillation modes, in which the conjunctives are to some extent the near companions, such as the Tivcha, the Pashta, and the Zarka, that are rendered as flourishes leading into the motif of the following disjunctive, rather than as motifs of their own right. The somewhat inconsistent use of dots above and below the words as disjunctives is closely similar to that found in Syriac texts. The KO also notes some similarity with the punctuation of Samaritan Hebrew. The Tiberian system. By the 10th century in the Common Era, the chant in use in Palestine had clearly become more complex, both because of the existence of the Paser, the Geresh, and the Tlishad motifs in longer verses, and because the realization of a phrase ending with a given type of break varied according to the number of words and syllables in the phrase. The Tiberian Masoretes therefore decided to invent a comprehensive notation with a symbol on each word to replace the fragmentary systems previously in use. Now, what this is saying is the physical history, the Tiberians developed it for their reasons, and people, it became part of the system. Now, whether that was a re-revealment of what was known from Moshe at Mount Sinai or something new and added, we will just have to wait until the resurrection of the dead when we will talk to Moshe directly and ask him these kinds of questions. In particular, it was necessary to invent a range of different conjunctive accents to show how to introduce and elaborate the main motif in longer phrases. For example, the Tavir is preceded by a Mercha, a short flourish in shorter phrases, but by a Darga, a more elaborate run of notes in longer phrases. The system they devised is the one in use today and is found in the biblical manuscripts such as the Aleppo Codex, a Masoretic treatise called the Diduk Hata'anim, translated as the Precise Rules of the Accents by Aaron ben Moses ben Asher, survives. Though both the names and the classifications of the accents differ somewhat from those of the present day. As the accents were and are not shown on a Torah scroll, it was found necessary to have a person making hand signals to the reader to show the tune, as in the Byzantine system of Numez. This system of paronomy survives in some communities to the present day, notably in Italy. It is speculated that both the shapes and the names of some of the accents, the tifcha, literally the hand breath, may refer to the hand signals rather than to the synaptical functions or the melodies denoted by them. Today, in most communities, there is no system of hand signals, and the reader learns the melody of each reading in advance. The Tiberian system spread quickly and was accepted in all the communities by the 13th century. Each community reinterpreted its reading traditions so as to allocate one short musical motif to each symbol. This process has gone furthest in the Western Ashkenazi and in the Ottoman, the Jerusalem Sephardi Syrian systems, traditions. Learning the accents and their musical rendition is now an important part of the preparations for a bar mitzvah, as this is the first occasion on which a person reads from the Torah in public. In the early period of the Reform Movement, there was a move to abandon the system of cantillation and give scriptural readings in normal speech. in the Hebrew or even in the vernacular, in the German or whatever the common language was. In recent decades, however, traditional ventilation has been restored in many communities. I also would like to point out, when I learned my bar mitzvah portion, which was in 1960, I was not taught trope. I was taught my bar mitzvah portion only. There was no effort to give me the tool to read any other part of the scroll. That was a specialized person, a reader, the laner. My bar mitzvah, I read my portion. I had no idea that there was a system. By the 1980s, 1990s, the new rabbis, the new teachers that came out of the universities that started to be developed in America were had picked up on teaching trope so that their students had the ability to read anywhere in the scroll. Now, this would always been true, or not always, but had been true for many centuries in Europe. But you have to remember, America was separated from Europe by much distance, and Europe was decimated by the Shoah. In Israel, you had these different countries, these different peoples coming from different countries that had no real tradition. They had what they remembered after 4 years of hell. And yes, there was Jews always in the country, in the land, and they had their patterns. And all of this has become very mixed as tradition. Psalms, Proverbs, and Job. The system of cantillation signs used throughout the Tanakh is replaced by a very different system for these three poetic books. Many of the signs may appear the same or similar at first glance, but most of them serve entirely different functions in these three books. Only a few signs have functions similar to what they do in the rest of the Tanakh. The short narratives at the beginning and end of Job uses the regular system, but the bulk of the book, the poetry, uses the special system. For this reason, these three books are referred to as Sifrei Emet, books of truth. The word Emet beginning truth, but also being an acronym for the first letters of the three books, Iyov, Mishle, and Tehillim. A verse may be divided into one, two, or three sticks. A one-stitch verse is divided by Dehi, which looks like Tivcha, but is under the last letter of the word. In a two-stitch verse, the first stitch ends with Atna. In the three-stitched verse, the first stitch ends with a Oled Be'yored, which looks like a Mapach, above the word, followed by Tifcha, on either the same word or two consecutive words. And the second stitch ends with Atna. Major disjunctives within a stitch, are Rabiah Katon. Immediately before Olev V'Yored, Rabiah Gadol, elsewhere, and Tiznor, which looks like Zarka. The last stitch may be divided by Rabia Megurash, which looks like a Geresh combined with Rabia. Minor distinct disjunctives are Paser Gadol, Sheshelet Gadola, Azla Legarme, looking like Kadma, and Mechupa Legarme, looking like a Mapach. All of these except the Pasar are followed by a Pasik. Mechupa without a Pasik sometimes occurs in the beginning of a phrase. All other accents are conjunctives. The Mishnah. Some old manuscripts of the Mishnah, including cantillation marks, similar to those in the Bible. There is no surviving system for the musical rendition of these. Today, many communities have a special tune for the Mishnaic passage, Bamei Madikin, in the Friday night service. Otherwise, there is often a customary intonation used in the study of Mishnah or Talmud, somewhat similar to an Arabic Makam. But this is not reduced to a precise system like that for the biblical books. Recordings have been made for Israeli National Archives, and Frank Alvarez Berea has published a book-length study of the Syrian tradition of the Mishnah reading on the basis of these recordings. The Jewish-born Christian convert Ezekiel Margolos has translated the New Testament into Hebrew in 1865, Chas V'Shalom, with cantillation marks added. It is the only completely cantillated translation of the New Testament. The translation was published by the London Jewish Society. In our next class, we will start to learn the vowels. It is recommended that our students start to memorize the basic root vowels of each letter. Each letter has a name. When that name is used, the vowel used in the first letter of the name of the letter is to be the vowel used as the root vowel. Any letter in any name can be pronounced using the root vowel at any time. That includes the Tetragrammaton. That is what we do on Rosh Chodesh. That is what we do other times. It is a more intense energy process. It is a greater revelation of light. In my opinion, there is no Hebrew prayer, Hebrew study, that is not to be sung each time it is said. The link below will bring you to an MP3 recording of root vowel sounds. It is highly recommended that this be practiced until it becomes second nature to the student. You will find it very useful in the future use of the Hebrew letters. You will find it very useful as you start to study the Sefer Yetzirah and start to make connections and meditations and siliks where you intertwine the letters. When you do that with those sounds and those singing in your mind, it's extremely powerful. I'm not going to start the next link, but we only have 4 or 5 minutes left. Does anybody have any questions? At 8:30 tonight, we'll be doing a class, the Esther's Sefirot, Rabbi Ashlag's book. We'll continue that reading. Tomorrow night at 8:30, we will be doing or teaching the Advanced Reincarnation class. Wednesday night at 6 p.m., this is West Coast time, is Tu Bishvat, and all day Thursday. These are energy times that are very, very powerful. You're welcome to join us or to participate in your own Seder. But it is recommended that you do participate in the Tu Bishvat Seder. Thursday night at 8:30, we will have a Zohar class. Friday morning at 6:30 a.m., we will have a class in relativity, but also mind over matter, because this is my last class in the Carson City area. I'm going to be putting both classes together. Saturday night is a first opportunity we have to read the Zohar in the new frame of energy of the new week. That's at 8:30 p.m. And then 10:30 Sunday morning, we will continue our class on the Third Temple. I'm reminding you that the next 2 weeks, I will be traveling once to Los Angeles to visit with my family and once to wherever my new location is, which is not yet determined. My classes, therefore, will be erratic. So I basically have canceled the classes for next week and the following week until I get settled. There will not be classes, but I will start them up as soon as possible. Please check the class times link in the Hashem website. It's located on the right side of every page in the Hashem website. Click on class times, and you will know what's happening with the classes. Are there any questions? Have a beautiful evening.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.